to Rexomatic Records with your hosts Rex Anderson, Tom Hughes, and Andy Kern. This is a show dedicated to pretty much anything we want to talk about. In conjunction with our interview with the amazing Django Haskins, we put together a very special package of music for our listeners. We call it the Django Pack, and it includes four albums in CD format stretching over Django's career. Also, it includes one of his big, beautiful vinyl records. We encourage you to check out the music and pick it up at DjangoHaskins.com or follow the link here at Rexomatic.com. As you know, it's pretty challenging for most musicians today not being able to play live and tour. So this is our way, and we hope your way, of supporting a phenomenal musician by taking some Django Haskins home with you. Once again, at DjangoHaskins.com or follow the link here at Rexomatic.com. That's spelled DjangoHaskins.com. So welcome, everyone. We have Tom Hughes on the line. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And Mr. Andy Kern, are you there?
I am here.
So we've got our resident writer, Tom Hughes, and our resident producer, Andy Kern, on the line. We're also joined today by our very special guest, Mr. Django Haskins. Django, are you there?
I am. I'm here.
All right. Well, welcome. We really appreciate you taking the time on this election day to get out and work around your voting to do a little interview with us.
Oh, my pleasure. I voted so like 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think we all did. We've all tried to jump the gun here.
Voted every week for the last 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. Well, that's good. So I'm going to start this by turning it over to Tom Hughes to talk a little bit about your background and history. You and I met almost 20 years ago at one of the National Guitar Workshops and have stayed in touch over the year. In touch
more
over
than,
the years.
More than 20 years, right? 21 years.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. And I have a collection of Django Haskins CDs in various bands that I've collected over the years, and all starting with an album called Folding Stars that we literally listened to on the way back from that guitar shop, or guitar workshop, I should say. So that's still in the collection and still one of my favorites. So to get us started here and talk a little bit about your background, I'm going to turn it over to Tom Hughes, and then we'll kind of somewhere in the conversation shift over to the Big for His Age 2 album that you were so kind to contribute your talents to.
Django, it is great to see you after all these years where I was at that same guitar workshop as Rex and where we met first.
Yeah, nice to hear you.
I have to think of you these days, I think, as much more than a multi-instrumentalist. You're more of a mega-instrumentalist. You not only seem to play everything, you can sing any part. And in your solo albums and your various combination albums, how do you, I think your talent attracts a remarkable number of people to you. How do they find you in Chapel Hill?
Well, thank you, first of all, and I wish half of those things were true, but I will go on the premise that I'll just accept them for the sake of our conversation. You know, Chapel Hill is a great music community. I moved here for the music. I was living in New York City and moved here 18 years ago in 2002. And I moved here because of I was drawn here by the music that was already being made here. And it's just a really, really rich place culturally. So the few people who have found me, I appreciate all three or four of you out there. You know, if they do it, it's probably through pure luck because my promotional skills are really, really terrible.
I think, though, that people like Chris Stamey, who was from Chapel Hill, and I got to see in the DBs, mm-hmm. a long time ago, and yeah. Sid Straw, who I got to see in Golden Palominos a long time ago,
yeah,
and Gary Loris from the Jayhawks.
Yeah.
They're all over the place, and yet they are drawn to you like a moth to a devastating flame.
Well, those are all those people you mentioned are all really good friends, and you know, and honestly, the credit for connecting all these people really goes to Chris Stamey, who through his work producing, I've worked with him on various projects, but also especially in putting together this thing called the Big Stars Third, which is the great Memphis band Big Star. Their third record was never performed live. It was this very strange, dissolving, psychedelic record that no one had really heard live, and the band broke up and Alex died. The year Alex died, actually, Chris was working on Alex Chilton, the leader.
Chilton, right.
Chris was working to perform Big Star's Third with Alex, I think, involved maybe. And then, you know, it kind of changed into a different kind of thing after that happened. But Jody Stevens, the surviving original member of the band, the other guys who had played in the band in the 90s, Ken and Ken Stringfellow and John Auer, a bunch of people who really just love the music of Big Star kind of came together. And that's how I met a lot of those people that you're talking about. Gary Loris and I met doing a Big Star show in Chicago. I met Sid through some other friends out in LA who, again, I met through Chris Stamey. So Stamey is really the center. He's the Kevin Bacon of indie rock. And a really wonderful guy. So that's really how it happened. You know, I feel really fortunate that I kind of crossed paths with a lot of people who I respect greatly and ended up kind of having a lot in common with kind of personally and musically. So it's been a trip the last 6 or 7 years.
I mean, your solo albums, I think, are remarkable. The lyrics, you've got a beautiful new video on YouTube that is Plague.
Oh, yeah. Strange Birds.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I keep hoping that that will lead to a new Old Ceremony album called The Old Cemetery.
There you go.
But it is a tremendous, video. And I'm wondering how you put that together.
Well, the video itself for Strange Birds, I mean, it was just really just a lyric video. So with my meager iMovie skills, I put that together. But during the whole quarantine time, I've been involved in a weekly songwriting group. We meet every Monday night on Zoom, and it's people all over the country. A lot of people on the West Coast, some people in New York, Midwest, Austin, Texas. If you ever met David Hamburger at the Guitar Workshop, he was a teacher there as well.
Sure.
A really amazing guitar player. He's in this group. One of my old bandmates from New York, Byron Isaacs, who now plays in a band called the Lumineers, is also in the group. There are about 13 of us, and it's just wonderful. And what it does is forces us each to write a song every week. So I've written 26 songs during the quarantine. And Strange Birds was one of the most recent ones, but there have been two since then, and I'm working on one right now, so we'll see how it goes. So that's been really the bright spot for me of this whole period, really. It's just writing and writing and writing and recording as I can. I have two young kids, so that takes a lot of my time.
Yeah. So you haven't felt sort of your spirit hasn't been crushed by this
It's been crushed.
Okay.
But my
there's still a little juice left.
Well, yeah. Creatively, it's been actually not a bad time. I miss playing with my bandmates, and we are working on some tracks remotely. Just got some of the parts back on a song I wrote about Valerie Solanas, the woman who shot Andy Warhol. Mm-hmm. I sent the guys a track of that of me playing it, and then the rhythm section sent me back their tracks, and we're working on kind of a track at a time and see how it goes. But yes, we are still doing that. But it's been, you know, working with what we've got. I'm lucky to have the space here to create. Right now, my children are napping. That's why I'm able to do this or teach during the day at all.
I thought it was either they were napping or you had one child-proof doorknob.
Yeah, heavy locks and soundproofing.
Well, talking about recording there in your Zoom home studio, maybe Andy, you've got some questions as it relates to the tracks that we sent over to Django on the Big Frizz Age 2 project.
Yeah, thanks, Django, first of all, for sending back such easy to work with work. I I've been doing this for, I don't know, I can't remember how many, well, 80, 83 or so. And so I know it's always, you know, bringing in session people, it's always a challenge to get someone to kind of like find their place in the song. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter how good they are. And I just have to say it was really amazing, you know, how you just, I don't know, you just got into the song, you put yourself in there. And I didn't edit the tracks. They just all just kind of went into the mix just as you played them. I did like the guitar tones. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, you did kind of like a chink track. Uh-huh. And then you did kind of the melodic track, but the modulation effect on the almost kind of like weird, kind of, you know, when you walk that line of like, that's a little bit too much modulation. No, uh-huh. That's just right. Do you remember uh-huh. what you used on that?
I think I used a Memory Man pedal, one of the big old silver ones. And yeah, I like to play with that sometimes. It's a little noisy. I've retired it since then because mm-hmm. it's just so noisy. But yeah, I love the big knobs that you can kind of play with. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent
part. Excellent tone. The tracks themselves were really clean and nice and fun to play with, so that makes a big difference too. So
yeah, that does help, doesn't it? Like to have your spot just sitting there.
Right.
Right. And then the vocals also, now that I didn't have any idea about your background, but now that I hear who you've worked with and stuff, it all makes sense. I mean, they were just like, you know, perfectly sang perfectly. Well, maybe not perfect, but you know what I mean. I didn't have to adjust them. They were like perfectly wrong again, like Excellent. The guitar. It just kind of flowed with whatever what we were doing. How long does it take you to do that? Do you kind of hear those parts or?
I think a lot of it has to do with being a songwriter. So I think in terms of arrangements all the time. So even if I'm doing playing on a friend's record as a sideman, I'm still thinking like a songwriter. So I think of space and where things, you know, where things can fit. And also I'm really listening to lyrics and thinking about what the emotional arc is going to be and what the effect of different kinds of singing on it would be. You know, it's just, I mean, to me, that's the fun of recording, is just really kind of trying to you have a good song, which you guys had a bunch of great songs, and then trying to figure out how to elevate them in whatever small way I can, and not bring them down, not weigh them down, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we take just a quick listen to the song, What Would You Do, on the Big for His Age 2 album. We'll just play a little bit at the beginning, but I think it's a good illustration of some of the guitar work, and there's a little bit of the backing vocals in there too. So let me just play this for a second.
Mixed up confusion, it's a complicated world. Too many choices for so many boys and girls. Look to your left and then lean back to your right. Say hi to your neighbor, just don't get too close tonight. I guess that's the way it's always been. Just can't win. Everybody's talking like they know the only way.
That was great, Django. Thank you. I had one, not to be like, I want to try to make at least one of my questions as long as Tom's are. So, You so seamlessly fit into what we sent you. Is it easier to do it on someone else's song than it is on one of your own songs? Sometimes you struggle more on your own than you do as when you're kind of step back and looking at more as a producer and for hire guy.
It's a good question. I think sometimes it is easier just because with my own, I've often, you know, on previous tracks already done the first things that came to my mind. And then I have to think about, okay, where can I fit around myself? Whereas with other people, when they come in with their tracks, they probably didn't do it the way that I would have exactly done it. So it gives me a little bit more of my own space. But, you know, I think it's all, part of it is being just a music fan and just having having listened to a whole lot of records and having some various kind of ideas, you know, from saying, oh, what if, well, this is kind of reminding me of Buffalo Springfield. And I really like the way that they do this thing. Maybe I'll try that kind of element, or, you know, just kind of drawing on a lifetime of being a music fan, I think really helps in terms of, you don't have to reinvent the wheel, but to come up with something kind of fresh sounding without being too obtrusive, you know, it can help to have that, to build that vocabulary through just listening to a lot of records, basically, and analyzing them, and playing a lot of records. I have 13 right, albums, so I've messed up plenty of tracks.
I've been there. I made that mistake already.
Django, how about ahead, on Rex? I was going to say, Django, on the vocal tracks that you did on What Would You Do, you kind of had some nice layering in on that. Tell me a little bit about your setup and what you're using to track those background vocals.
I use essentially one mic for everything because it's usually just me recording, and it's an Audio Technica, a large diaphragm. I don't actually even, you know, I'm one of those guys who, like, when the engineers start talking about mic numbers, I roll up the window like this, and I have decades of just not listening to people talk about gear. So I have one good mic. I'm told it's good, and it gets good sounds, and so I use it for everything, and that's it, really.
Yeah, I really like the background vocals. That really added to it. And your guitar, I felt like you were using your volume knob there just kind of bring it up and take it out when you needed it. And those little swells really fit in well with the background vocals too.
Oh, so, good.
Yeah, good. Very cool stuff. Well, let's switch over a little bit. And maybe, Tom, you have a few more questions about Django's catalog since we talked about it. As a matter of fact, while we're talking here, I might even be able to throw a little background picture up of some of his albums.
Yeah, your latest album, I think that's available, is Shadowlands?
Shadowlawn, yeah.
Shadowlawn. But you're working on a new album as we speak.
Yeah, well, so I've got another solo record in the can that was going to come out. I was going to start getting it out right when the pandemic hit, so I kind of put that on hold. And now, as I mentioned, I've got 25 new songs, so I really have to kind of grapple with that. I might cannibalize that record or maybe just put that out and move on and do another record. So, I mean, at this point, it's kind of a confusing landscape for putting out records, as I'm sure you guys have found in that, you know, singles tend to be more the way that people are consuming albums, a lot of people, and, you know, the physical album, unless you're printing vinyl, is there's not really a format. and then you're really just largely asking people to stream your music for free if it wouldn't be too much trouble, kind of thing. So it's a weird business model, obviously not designed by artists. So at this point, I'm just kind of making music and trying to get it out to as many people as possible, but with no real expectation about anything happening on the old model of being discovered in the cavern or anything like that.
What you're in touch with a lot of other songwriters. How are they getting through this time when no one can tour and support an album?
It's hard. I think everybody just kind of has to find their own way to do it. A lot of my friends are also teachers, teach music. I do as well. That's one way, and that is possible remotely. I have students in California, New York, and all over the place. At this point, it doesn't really matter where you are. So that's a big way that people are doing it. But it's a real struggle. I mean, it's a struggle for everyone, obviously, who's not able to work remotely.
Have you noticed, I don't know exactly how artists keep track of their downloads, the sheer quantity of their downloads. Have you noticed an uptick in people downloading music during this close down?
No, not really. I mean, you can track all your streams and things like that, and downloads at Bandcamp, but no, not really. I mean, the thing is, now that's the only way that anyone is being heard. So there's a real glut in the online market, as it were. And in terms of performance as well. You know, when you've got Richard Thompson sitting on his couch playing guitar for free, streaming on his Facebook page, you know, it's you're competing with the whole world in the same venue, as it were. Right. So it's just, it really just tells us what we already knew about the music business. but it's something that I think people who had been making a really good living, which I have done a fair amount of touring, a couple of decades of touring, but never really made that much of a living from it. It was all despite touring. But for the people who really were making a living at it, I mean, I think it's really been tough.
You know, Django, as you talk about the digital distribution where these pennies are flowing through to the musicians, the other sort of unique thing that's happened is this resurgence of vinyl records. I know you guys have done vinyl on several of the records you put out. I have on in vinyl versions of them. We're really looking forward to the Big Freeze H2 because we're kind of doing two sides of it, a 180 gram vinyl for sort of the audiophile market, and then also our really wonderful Big Red album.
That's awesome.
Which will look at least fun. But when we talk about vinyl, what are some of your first memories about vinyl records and sort of that feel and that process from when you were a kid?
Yeah.
First impressions.
My parents were folk musicians in the 60s, and they had they were also kind of jazz fans, and so I had a lot of their records to pilfer from a very young age. And I remember being kind of fascinated by the covers of like Disraeli Gears and Revolver and things like that. You know, I have a really specific memory of my parents also taught at the University of Florida, where I grew up in Gainesville, and there were a few times that my mom would bring me with her. I must have been, I don't know, 10 or something. I don't really know. Parenting was different then. But she would bring me with her to the university and take me to the music library and just kind of leave me there for a while she was doing some work or something. And I remember discovering the Thelonious Monk Underground record, where he has a stuffed Nazi on a chair and all these other kind of bizarre things all around him. It's just this incredible picture. And I fell in love with Monk. I remember getting the Ornette Coleman, Shape of Jazz to Come, and you know, just things like that, just being turned on to all kinds of stuff. Baroque chamber music. I mean, just because it was there and it was free and I had nothing else to do and I would just sit and listen to it. So yeah, vinyl's always been a big part of that experience for me, and I really enjoy listening to things on vinyl.
It's funny that when you mention Monk, even at the height of his fame, I think a lot of people don't know this, and it may be what a lot of artists are going through now. Monk was also working as a toll taker at the Holland Tunnel.
Wow.
And he would go from that job to the clubs and play.
Yeah. Wow.
Because that's how the only way he could make money.
Yeah.
From his music and another job combined.
Man, that is heavy.
Do you still listen to vinyl in your house there, or you switched over to mostly digital listening in terms of music?
No, yeah, we listen to vinyl. Something I try to get my kids to do with me, and you know, I don't have a massive vinyl collection, but we have some, and we definitely put it on. And yeah, I mean, it's just it's an experience. You know, with streaming, you know, you put it on, and then when the album's done, it picks another album for you, and you know, 8 hours later, you wake up and a pool of blood on the kitchen floor or whatever. You know, with vinyl, you every 25 minutes you got to get up and turn it over. So it keeps you more engaged, I think, in that way. And I like that. You're making more active choices about what you're listening to. So yeah, I think vinyl's great in that way.
Well, we appreciate your participation in the record.
Man, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having
me. Yeah, when you hear it, I think you'll be really pleased with the song and with the vinyl. And we'll send both the CD and the vinyl to you. Before we go, is there anything that we should be aware of to kind of keep an eye on? Either your website, what's a good place for our fans and friends to go to kind of track your creativity? And then also if you've got any kind of virtual shows or anything like that planned. But more importantly, just how can we direct people to your music to pick up? As we're talking, I've got pictures of some of your older albums up behind me there. But how would people find those?
Probably the most active, so I do have a site, the djangohaskins.com. I'm not great about keeping it up lately, but my most active one is my Facebook music page, which is Django Haskins Music. And that's where I would post everything, including virtual shows and things like that. And I think I'm going to kind of start releasing a string of singles. You know, Spotify is also, a very convenient way to listen to a lot of my stuff. It's all up on there as well. I have a Bandcamp page. I mean, you know, anywhere is fine. The one that's updated the most often is the Facebook page.
If people want to contribute because they really like your music and they'd like to pick up physical copies of the CDs or the vinyl, any music outlets are okay, or would you prefer they come to your website to purchase those things? What's the best way for them to buy your project?
You know, either way is fine. I mean, I think probably the easiest way for the albums would be just to send me a note on the Facebook page, and then I can mail it out to them. There are a few kind of singles and things like that that are on Bandcamp that are only on Bandcamp, so they could get those if they wanted to. For physical copies. And then, you know, it is available at all kind of all the standard outlets as well. And that never hurts. I'm always happy for people to have it regardless, however they get it.
All right. Well, thanks again, Tom and Andy. Do you guys have any follow-up questions?
I just wish we had about four times as much time talk to Django.
Yeah.
He's a remarkable performer, songwriter, and he is someone who is not to be missed, and none of his projects are to be missed. Everyone should keep an eye out for everything that comes out of Django and Chapel Hill.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. It's really great to talk to you.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Thank you for participating. We'll see you down the road.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. Bye.
Road signs stand like monuments to home. I haven't seen another car for miles. Riding you this state road valentine. Shift stick, grease pan, ovaries, a smoke machine. I only get to stand still in my dreams. Gotta haul this rig to the Seminole County line. Riding you this state road valentine. Get you some peanuts in a bag. And